Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing all things right now, Tennessee Titans and NFL free agency. Joe, J.J. Watt, the sweepstakes are over. He signs with Arizona yesterday, 2 years, $31 million, $23 million of which, according to Adam Schefter, is guaranteed. Arizona paying a whole lot of money for J.J. Watt to come into the fold there. We'll see how that works out for him.
To finish fourth in the NFC West. But, hey, be a great story if J.J. Watt goes in there, turns everything around, turns around the culture, and has like 15 sacks.
We didn't get to this earlier when we were talking about him, but I know it's like your favorite topic, so we're going to do it right now. Like J.J. Watt, some people, as we were talking about him with the Titans, we're comparing him to, like, he's the Tom Brady of the defensive side of the ball because he comes in and he inspires the defense to be better, and he's got that, you know, intangible it factor that he just brings with him to the table. Do you think that he's going to bring that to Arizona?
Right. Like, whenever anybody else makes a play, oh, it's because of J.J. J.J. Tommy told you. He believes in you. it's crazy. And it's funny, too. I didn't even realize. I mean, Porth said earlier, Nate Washington said he didn't even like being his teammate. So, yeah. And there's some Houston coach out there saying he was
bad for
they
him.
They were glad to get rid of him. I mean, yeah, and some of that sounds, not the Nate part, but the anonymous coach sounds a little bit like sour grapes. But maybe he's not this completely universally loved person. Huh? Maybe not. Now, Tommy is, though.
Yeah, Brady is. Gotta love him. Do you think that J.J. Watt, like, is he going to be the most over-covered guy next year in the NFL? Next to Brady, of course. Like, well, are we going to hear, like, constant updates on J.J. Watt and the Arizona Cardinals?
There will be a lot of interest in that. Whoever they open against, there's going to be a lot of interest to see if he does anything. Yeah, he's going to be up there. Maybe Drew Brees, too. Drew Brees is putting out workout videos right now. I'm starting to think Drew Brees might come back for one more.
Think so?
Well, I mean, I will say this. I think the plan was probably to retire, but when we found out all his injuries at the end of the year, then I was like, okay, now I see why he threw the ball like me when I was four.
Yeah.
You know? So if you're him, do you want to go out on that when you can't even perform physically and if you actually could get totally healthy for next year?
Probably not.
So.
What, didn't he, like, take 200 pounds up a hill?
Yeah.
Like in that workout video that was posted over the weekend?
Doing the Derrick Henry workouts.
Why would you be doing that if you're just going to retire?
You just want to stay in shape, man.
Exactly. Right. Why would you be doing that? Well, I mean, Jared does that stuff too.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But he's impressing the ladies, you know? When you're impressing the ladies like Jared, I mean, Drew is married, kids, so he doesn't need to do that stuff.
Yeah, Drew's not posting workout videos after, you know, J.J. Watt gets cut.
Right.
No, Arizona does take on Houston next year. They play against the Texans. It's at home.
Yeah, but it's at home. Yeah. Someone brought
J.J. Watt
up.
Will end up here. He will play against the Titans next year at Nissan Stadium.
Yeah.
So if you thought that you were getting away from J.J. Watt, you're not. Get to see him one more time.
Ooh. Hey, Ryan Tannehill's like, well, he can still pack a punch.
I know Derrick Henry just ran for approximately 600 yards last year against J.J. Watt's defense, but whatever.
Hopefully Tyson Brilo isn't lined up against J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
Nah, J.J. Watt looked pretty good on that play.
Probably worth the $23 million guaranteed on that play.
Yeah, that got him 11 of the $23 million right there.
Think he sends any of that check to Sombrilo?
I don't know. I mean, what did he get? So 5 sacks last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of attention. Again, I would love for J.J. to have an incredible year, help them win, and take some angry, growling picture with the cards and inspire everyone. But I think this is going to be remembered as a massive overpayment.
We've also talked about Jadeveon Clowney here on the show today and whether or not the Titans should consider bringing him back into the fold. And that is the subject of our poll question today at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. If you could re-sign Clowney to a one-year deal worth $8 million, would you do that if you're the Tennessee Titans? 503 votes are in. 56% say no. 44% say yes. So it is still very, very close in terms of Titans fans and whether or not they'd bring back Clowney into the fold.
Do we have anybody explaining themselves yet?
No, not really. It's just a
why
simple
is there no
yes or
why
no
is
question.
There no commentary?
It's just a yes or no question.
I mean,
Would you do it?
We got somebody. Yeah, but we got somebody texting on the text line to blow up the whole Titans. You know,
we did have somebody ask, "Why would you blow up the NHL team and not the Titans?"
Okay, let me explain. The Titans just won 11-5, won the division, won the AFC title game before that. Why are you blowing that up?
I don't know. I didn't ask the question.
Well, that's my answer, is to ask the question back. I'd like to, but someone, if this many people are voting for Clowney, I want to hear, you know, some explanation.
Well, here's
that.
An explanation from Brian in Portland on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. He says, "I'm only voting yes on Clowney if you can add a Bud Dupree along with it. You need more than one pass rusher out of this free agency class. One guy will not fix the issues that we had, and you also need to look at interior defensive linemen to tag team with Jeffrey Simmons, because I doubt in John Robinson's mind that he's comfortable with T.R. Tartt and Laurel Murchison."
Okay, so you're going to pay $8 million for Clowney and you're going to get Bud Dupree? Now I really want to see what they're going to do with the books.
A lot of restructuring going on.
Or like the whole offensive line gets cut? It's just like, hey, Ryan, Derek, you guys are good enough. Deal with this. If you do this with Clowney for $8 million, you're not doing a big deal with one of these top shelf edge, and maybe you don't want to pay one of those top shelf guys, and you'd rather pay Clowney mid level money, which I doubt he's going to end up having to settle for anyway, and someone else who's like on the scrap heap that you really like. There's going to be a lot of options out there at the lower prices, but you're not getting one of the big boys if you do this.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Matt from Camden text in, "The only way I'm re-signing Clowney is if we can get him for $4 million a year. There's no way that I'm paying more than that." Like, First off, I hear what Matt's saying. I largely agree with it. Like, I would probably, if I'm the Titans considering bringing Clowney back, about 5, maybe 6 is as high as I'd be willing to go. I understand that's probably not realistic for Jadeveon Clowney. And to your point, like, somebody out there is going to offer him $10, $11, $12 million, somewhere in that neighborhood. So if that's the case, if you're the Titans, you wish him well in his next stop and you move on from there. But to your point, like, if it is $8 million, like the poll question says, and the Titans make that move, like, what else can you do on the line along with him? Like, to me, you can't do that and also go get a guy like a Judon or a Carl Lawson that could be out there as well. So, to me, the Clowney discussion almost feels like if nothing else really works out for the Titans this offseason, that would be the last resort.
Right. And if that's the case, you could do worse as a last resort. You still have hope, you know, that he could really be healthy this time. And now, you know, some more time in the system and it's a better fit, all that stuff. But then you go to, is that where he's going to be? Are you going to be his last resort? Because I have my doubts. Although, I don't know. Someone's going to have to suffer this offseason.
Yeah.
You would think. J.J. Watt just makes it seem like it's 2019 all over again. Party like it's 2019, J.J.
Well, speaking of partying like it's 2019, that appears to be the plan for Alabama football this fall, coming up for the next college football season. How realistic is that? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have teamed up to help you continue the tradition with a hockey home-gating party, and it's time to text into the game line at 615-737-1025 for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Home Gate. You can watch a weekend Preds game with a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. Just text the word T-Mobile to 615-737-1025 now to enter. That's T-Mobile to 615-737-1025. The winner will be contacted on Thursday, and you must be 21 or older to enter the competition. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We've talked about Jadeveon Clowney and the Titans. Caleb texts in and says that he would let Clowney walk. He compares him to a regular Cheeto in a bag full of hot Cheetos. I like that. It's pretty good.
I love the analogy. I love the regular Cheeto, hot Cheeto thing. But I want to know, so who are the hot Cheetos?
I don't know. That's a good question. Brooks Reed?
or is that Clowney in the bag is like the other like free like edge rushers that you could get? Is that what he means?
Maybe so.
Well, Titans better get
those hot Cheetos. Pretty good.
Those fire Cheetos. What are they called? They're called hot Cheetos, or are they called fire Cheetos?
I think they're just hot Cheetos. I have no idea.
They're good, man. Those are addictive. Now I'm hungry.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kevin from Clarksville texted in, if it walks like a clown and talks like a clown, odds are it's a clown. Jadeveon is a bona fide bum. His whole career was made off of one tackle in college. The reason Correa was mad last year is because he knew Clowney was a bum and taking his playing time, and then we traded someone who put his heart on the line for us. Get rid of Clowney. Got a big Kamale Correa fan there.
Yeah. Of course, Correa's already been bounced from Jacksonville, so I don't know, man. Might be a little tough on Clowney there. Little tough. He's made a play or two in this league. He's made a play or two. You might want to check the stats. I don't want to become Mr. Clowney apologist.
There you go. You're about to talk your way back into Clowney.
Am I right or am I wrong?
You're right.
I mean, come on.
Great play in college, though.
It was a great play. And he was the number one recruit and all this stuff. And, yes, he has not lived up to being like the most freakish football player, you know, coming into college and then even in the NFL. But he's been pretty good. He's had some good seasons and some incredible games.
Well, Joe, regardless of who is on the field next year for the Tennessee Titans, hopefully there will be more fans in the stands that are able to watch the Titans play football next year. And for the Alabama Crimson Tide, it seems like the plan is right now to have all the fans in the stands for their football games coming up the fall at Bryant-Denny Stadium this season. This coming from an ESPN.com piece from Alex Scarborough. Alabama is moving ahead with plans to host full-capacity college football games at Bryant-Denny Stadium this coming season. Athletic Director Greg Burns announced on Monday. Burns tweeted a short statement after news earlier in the day that the school would be returning to in-person instruction without restrictions on classroom capacity in the fall. Burns said they'll continue to monitor medical guidelines. Alabama reduced its capacity to 20% last season. And right now, Joe, it appears that Alabama is planning, at least, to have full-capacity college football games come in the fall. What did you think of that announcement there from Alabama?
Well, it's early to say it, but isn't everyone?
I think that's certainly what they're hoping for, yeah.
Isn't every AD in the country right now thinking that?
Yeah.
I think so. It's interesting to say it now because we just have to see how things go. I mean, I'm seeing something in the Wall Street Journal about herd immunity in April, you know, which sounds awfully optimistic, but keep getting that vaccine, everybody.
Yep. Well, and that's the thing. Like, in this piece that Alex Scarborough has come out with, talks about, you know, and cites the CDC reporting a 7-day average of 66,348 infections in the United States, which was down roughly 10,000 from the previous week. Now, in Alabama, only 13% of people have received the vaccination or one shot of the vaccination so far. So some work to do on that part of it. But yeah, like I think everybody's hopeful that as vaccinations continue to roll out and hopefully as more and more people continue to receive them, that by the time the fall comes around, maybe it can be, if not totally normal in stadiums, at least a whole lot closer to it than it was this past year.
But when are, you know, non-medical field young people going to get to the vaccine?
It's a great question.
Yeah, I've seen different timelines, but it's not like imminent.
You know, right.
It's going to be a while. Maybe one of those things where at some point in the season you can have full stadiums, but maybe not right away. But
I mean, you're talking 100,000 people at Bryant-Denny Stadium.
But it's one of those things where, it's you have to be socially distanced, or what's the difference between 70, 90, 110? Yeah. Now you're packing it or you're
exactly
not, right?
Yeah.
So Sounds amazing to think about next year with all the sports with, you know, full crowds and all that stuff.
Hope, yeah.
Hope it happens.
I hope it happens, too. Like, I'm no medical expert, but the thought of college football games, because to me, like, of all the sports, like, I'll be honest, like, I got towards the end of the NFL season, and I didn't really, like, I didn't think about the crowd not being there. College football is the main one to me where I've been like, man, I really miss the crowd being a part of this. I mean, college basketball, too, but college football, like, back in the fall, I was like, man, you realize how big a difference it is out there with no student section going nuts and no fans and just the pageantry around college football. I think it's a little bit different than the other sports.
Well, the boos were still pretty loud at Neyland Stadium a couple times when I went there last year. Georgia, I swear. I don't know if they were using holograms.
Yeah, I don't know what number they were operating with, but the 30,000 or whatever they put out there, 25,000. Looked like a whole lot of people in Sanford Stadium.
What, I don't know if you watched any of the Oklahoma State basketball game last night. It was a great game. Cade Cunningham, he's a stud. But it sounded on TV like a full crowd. I was like, man, how many people? Like, what's going on? Oklahoma's just packing them in. And they show the crowd. I was like, it was a pretty robust crowd.
Well, it's gotten to the point now where I don't know if y'all feel this way, but like I'll be flipping around TV and I'll see either footage from old games or sometimes like the NHL Network or somebody's playing an old game and just the full stadium's in there. I'm like, oh, that's weird now to me. Like, it shouldn't be that way, and I'm really hopeful we're getting to a place that it's not going to be that way anymore in the fall. But, like, I look around, I'm like, man, there's a lot of people in there right now. I see that with a lot. Like, even in movies I watch right now, like when people are walking down a busy street, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of people around each other in this movie.
Look, they're all close to each other.
All close to each other. There's people in the same bar. How about that?
Yeah, concerts, mosh pits, the good old days.
Would y'all agree with me, though, that college football was the most noticeable absence of fans? Like, you miss them in all sports, obviously.
Well, yeah. I mean, you still, like, some stadiums, like the Big Ten had no one.
Right.
So it was also different. Like, you're watching a Big Ten game or an SEC game, it's still a huge difference between those two. I think one big difference is any games that didn't have the band.
Yeah.
Because the band is, you are used to hearing that constantly throughout a college game, obviously never in the NFL. That's a huge difference in the audio. So the places that at least had bands in the stadium, it seemed more normal. But, yeah, like the Big Ten games where there's like 20 parents in the stands. That was what it was just like pretty wild. I mean, I went to the Titans-Ravens game with nobody in the stadium. But, you know, the Titans had the one at the beginning of the year too. And there's a huge difference between that and even a couple thousand people.
Yeah, I would think so. Porth, would you agree?
I'll go back to what I said yesterday. College basketball, for me, is the weirdest contrast between having a full gym or arena or whatever and not having anybody at all. Like,
the tournament's going to be,
it's going to be super weird. And, you know, didn't Michigan State play at Duke this year?
Yep.
So I haven't watched a ton of college basketball this year, but I do remember tuning in for that and thinking, man, is this weird? It's a game at Cameron Indoor Stadium and there's nobody there.
Yeah.
The Cameron Crazies aren't there, and it's you can hear all the shoes squeaking.
Looks like they're playing in a high school gym.
Exactly.
Cameron Indoor. Yeah.
No, you're right. I think that is because, especially in college hoops, you get those students right, especially at a place like Cameron, right in your face on the floor. I mean, even different than the tournament. The tournament's still kind of, you know, it's still kind of separated a little bit, and it's neutral site and all that. Like, some of these home arenas in college basketball make such a huge difference, and you just haven't had any of that. That probably is the biggest difference.
And hopefully we're getting close to the point where we can start putting those conversations in the rearview mirror and getting fans back into the building. When we come back, we will dive back into the Nashville Predators. Preds TV analyst and former Preds goaltender Chris Mason will join us next. We'll look ahead at the game tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes. That's coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, you hear that music, you know exactly what it means. It's that time of the week here on Robbie and Rex Road to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend, Preds TV analyst, former Preds goaltender Chris Mason, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. C-Mace, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Oh, what's up, guys? That just gets me going. Gets the people going.
It does get the people going. It gets me going for sure as well. And right now, C-Mace, the Preds going as well, winning four of their last five games. What do you like about the way the Predators have been playing? How have they turned this thing around as of late?
I like a lot of their game. I really do, and I think it's looks like everybody's, you know, starting to settle in. I feel like, you know, John Hines is able to get some, you know, play some same lines together. I think he's still got to figure out something to do with Duchesne's line, but I think the other lines are going really well right now, and I think defensively, aside from, you know, a couple unforced errors, turnovers in the defensive zone, which I'd like to see cleaned up, especially against a team like Carolina, I think that's something that could end up costing them a little more than it did against Columbus. But other than that, I love the way they're attacking. I love the way they're going to the net. I love their special teams. It looks like they, you know, this is a completely different feeling group. They're a confident group right now. You know, every time you hear their post-game stuff and their, you know, their interviews, I think they're really happy with their game, and they know they can still get a little bit better. Obviously, you always can, but I think they're pretty happy with how they're playing as well, which is a good sign.
Yeah, you mentioned special teams, C-Mace. The power play looking dangerous, maybe as consistently, you know, dangerous and creative as it has in a while. And how much do you think Ellie Tolvanen factors into that?
Oh, he's, you know what, this is, you know, you guys have probably talked about him for the last couple of years, as we all have, right? It's this kid you've been waiting for to, you know, he keeps teasing you a couple of times, or, you know, the couple of times when he came up before, you didn't really see anything. He's just a young man. But now we're starting to see what all the hype was about. And when you have two shooting threats on a power play, obviously Roman Josi up top on the middle, and then you have Phil on the right side as a right-handed shot. He's got the ability, because he'll shoot. He shoots early. I love when they do this. You shoot in that power play early, especially the way they're set up right now. It helps the penalty killers overcommit so much more. And then Phil just sets him up. He shoots early in the game, scores a goal, whatever the case may be. And then he fake shot, and he's got Ellie Tolvanen, and he's a right-handed shot. So it pulls the penalty killers even farther over. And then Ellie Tolvanen, and we've seen that release. It's a world-class release. And he's made a couple goalies look really silly, just gets it on his stick and off so quickly. But I've been really impressed with him. His all-around game, you know, obviously we talk about the goals, but on the defensive side of things, he goes to the net. He's not a big guy, but he'll get into those battle areas. So I've been really, honestly, really happy with the way Tolvanen has come along, even within this season. He's taken huge strides.
C-Mace, I agree. Like, I've been very impressed by what I've seen with Tolvanen. And we've talked about it a little bit this week as well when it comes to him and just the confidence that he's playing with. Obviously, like, you think back to some opportunities that he's gotten before at the NHL level, and, you know, the rosters were just so deep that, and the team was so competitive, like, you just didn't have time to wait around on a young guy to figure things out. With this team and offensively, you know, how much they need a guy like Ellie Tolvanen. I feel like he's been freed up a little bit more this year, and maybe he's not looking over his shoulder, scared of making a mistake and being taken out of the lineup because of it. How much of that can be a factor for a young player, is just being allowed to play your game and freed up and not worry about making too many mistakes out there?
Oh, that's a great point, Robbie, because it's huge as a player when you're, you know, you get called up and let's say someone's, you know, injured or whatever. You're like, well, man, I only have a couple games. I got to do it. And, you know, I'm going to be on the fourth line. And, you know, so you put a lot of pressure on yourself, and you might never even get the opportunity within that game because of, you know, who you're playing against, what the situations are. You're probably not on the power play, and you're going back to Milwaukee in 2 days unless you score four goals in the next two games, you know, that type of thing. So there is a lot of that pressure. But now that he's able to go out there, he's able to have a couple games. He doesn't get on the scoreboard, but he's doing the right things. You get the, you know, kind of reassurance from the coaching staff. Hey, you're doing a good job defensively. The offense will come with your, you get to, you know, get to know your teammates better on a different level other than just being a call up. It's a huge difference when you have that security. It frees that up. It takes that weight off of your plate. And you're able to go out and start focusing on the things that you need to focus on with that freedom. That's a great point by you.
Zemius, were you surprised that UC Saros got both starts over the weekend, and where do you think that seesaw stands?
I wasn't actually. I figured they might do that because they have to win right now, and I think that's the best that Juice has looked all year. And with it being an afternoon game, I didn't see any problem with the recovery. He'd just been off for, you know, three or four games or whatever it was, three games, and it was a good move. He looked good. Like, he looks like, you know, there's a matter of time before he gets in that spot, in that zone where he finished off last season. He's capable of getting there and staying in that spot for a long time, and you could just see it. I knew right away in that first Columbus game that he was back, if you will. And they got to win games, so I'm not saying Pekka didn't play, you know, well in the stretch before, but you know, Saros played that good, and he's had great success against Columbus. So to me, it was the logical choice, and this is a tough week. So we know we're probably going to be seeing both guys this week too. But right now, I think, you know, it's Juice's net again right now.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason on with us, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. And C-Mace, obviously special teams were such a high area of concern earlier this year. We talked a little about the power play, specifically with what Forsberg and Josi and Tolvanen are doing right now, but the penalty kill also coming along lately as well. What do you think's gotten better in that area for the Predators on the penalty kill?
I think time. I think when you have a penalty kill and you're early in the season and you have, I don't know, five or six new guys to the team and maybe three or four new guys to your penalty kill, it takes time to develop that chemistry. That's a huge turnover. And this team hasn't gone through this in many, many years. So you have new coaches taking over the penalty kill as well. So it's a lot of adjustment time, a lot of time that they have to get together. And then it doesn't help when you're playing, you know, Tampa Bay and Florida and Carolina and Dallas. Obviously, their first couple of games are struggling now, but they do have a good power play, you know, to start the season. And I think now they understand each other. They have that chemistry. They play together instead of one guy chasing and the other three are stagnant, opens up a lane or vice versa, you know, getting out of sorts. And, you know, against some of these teams, you make one bad play or one bad decision, it's in the back of the net. And they're getting goaltending. When you're goaltending solid, it just erases any mistakes that you make and just gives the guys, you just build that confidence. You could see every time they're coming over the boards instead of, you know, and I feel like this too. I don't know about you guys, but I used to feel early in the season, like, oh man, I hope they kill this penalty off, but I don't know. They're hovering at like 60% on the penalty kill, which was horrible. But now I go over, I'm like, man, Columbus barely even gets in the zone. They never get set up. They hardly get any chances. And when they do, you got your goaltender to make a save for you. So it just, everything's clicking on it right now.
So you mentioned those teams, obviously, C-Mace, let's see, between now and the 21st, you're talking Carolina, Florida twice, Dallas, Carolina twice, Tampa Bay twice, Florida twice, Dallas once again. Incredible stretch for this team. If there's one thing that needs to, you know, if you could say, okay, this part of the team or player, you know, is going to be maximum or is going to be a lot better than it's been, what would it be? What would you change or improve?
Well, I think, obviously, to me, the last few games have been really good, but there's been some areas where there's zone exits and they've made some pretty bad turnovers. A couple have ended up in the back of the net. But to me, if you do that against those teams, murderers row, if you will, it's gonna hurt you, and it's gonna hurt you bad. But they've been disciplined, and I just think, you know, like we need Matt Duchene. We need him to start producing. He's had, you know, it seems like a million chances, and he's getting robbed, and I'm sure he's really frustrated right now. But I think he's a player that I look to, that he's been such an impactful player in his career. And to have that, you know, that added element that's not right there, that consistent offensive production from a player, you know, of his high regard, I think, you know, that's a player he's a difference maker. They're playing right now, but if you get him going and you get him on the score sheet on a consistent basis, you know, you're coming out of some of these these close hockey games and you're beating some of these teams that you just mentioned.
And C-Mace, another guy I throw in there would be Arvidsson, and obviously he gets on the score sheet the other day. A great play by Johansson to keep the puck in the zone. Arvidsson puts it on the net, and Cousins is there to redirect it in the back of the net. But just two goals so far from Arvidsson, and obviously, like, he's been a guy that we've been accustomed seeing produce at a high level and score at a high level. What are you seeing out there from Victor Arvidsson right now, and do you feel like he may be close to finding the back of the net on a more consistent basis?
Yeah, he does. Like he's man, you guys see it too. He gets a million chances in the game. He's shooting the puck from everywhere. I think right now, maybe earlier, he was trying to make the perfect shot. He'd come down, and I remember, you know, one specific two-on-one he had. I think it was against Detroit, or it might have been the first Columbus game. But yeah, two-on-one, he had quite a bit of time, and he just, you know, wound up. He was on the right side and just took a slap shot from the top of the circles. He could have went in my opinion, another, you know, 5-10 feet and got a better shot. But I think, you know, when you're struggling, you get that opportunity and you're missing the net and you're getting shots blocked and all those types of things, you know, your decision-making isn't quite, you know, you get in your head a little bit. And I think it's starting to, that line in particular has been like absolutely dominant. And if you look at the analytics side of what they're doing, they're out chancing teams like 20-4 and, you know, in terms of expected goals for the shots and scoring chances and all that. So it's a matter of time, but it's when you're in that long slump as a goal scorer, it just, again, it's just like this weight and it keeps getting heavier and heavier and heavier. He's got to break through, but he's doing all the right things. He's working hard. He's starting to get to the net. You see that speed burst. I think last year when he came back from the injury, he didn't quite have that speed burst that allows him the separation. He's been snake bitten, but I think now he's just got to just shoot the puck, just get it on net, see what happens. But he's a guy too, and Johansson, you know, both those guys, they haven't had a lot of goal production, and you need those guys. These are your highest paid players. You know, you got Duchesne, Johansson, Arvidsson. You expect, you know, to get a lot of goals. He's a potential 30-40 goal scorer, you know, in the full season. So they definitely have to score. But I think Arvidsson's playing really well. But again, at the end of the day, it's about results. So we need goals.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. See, Mace, appreciate you joining us as always, my friend, and have fun on the call tonight for the Preds against Carolina.
Thank you, guys. Have yourself a great day.
Absolutely. You as well. The Preds taking on Carolina tonight at 7 o'clock. Puck drop at 7. You can hear pregame starting at 6 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And speaking of the game tonight, it is time for Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Be the first caller at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You can guess the goal scorer for tonight's game for the Predators against Carolina, and if you win, you'll win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.